I changed to someone who learned to lead with love. Now, I didn't get there easily. I was a mess as a young college president. I was all over the place. One day I got into a fight with a male student on my campus. Like, we were yelling at each other, cussing each other out. I mean, let's be honest, you know you cuss, okay? All right? He comes in my office, we're yelling and screaming. He breaks down in tears. I don't know what to do with that because I'm from Chicago. You're a brother who cries in Chicago, you will get killed, okay? So I'm just like, psh. Luckily, I had a staff member there with me. She cared for him. She took him out of the room. And then she turned her attention on me. And she was an older staff member. She was a quintessential Southern mother. And she looked at me and she said, "Baby, I met your mother."
Welcome to Innovating Together, a podcast produced by the University Innovation Alliance. This is a podcast for busy people in higher education who are looking for the best ideas, inspiration, and leaders that will help you improve student success. I'm your host, Bridget Burns. Each week, I partner with a journalist to have a conversation with a sitting college president, chancellor, system leader, or someone in the broader ecosystem who's really an inspiring leader. And the goal is to have a conversation to distill their perspective and their insights gathered from their leadership journey. Our hope is that this is inspiring and gives you something to look forward to each week. Welcome to another episode of the Innovating Together podcast from the University Innovation Alliance. I'm your host, Bridget Burns, the CEO of the UIA. And today I am excited to bring to you another episode where the Innovating Together podcast is for the podcast for busy people in higher ed who are looking for the best ideas and insights that will help you improve student success. And today is definitely one of those. Now, today is a special episode that we're going to be sharing another look inside the UIA National Summit. Now, the last time, at the last episode that we had, I shared that the summit date has been finally unveiled. It's going to be October 23rd through the 25th in Tempe, Arizona, and that the tickets are on sale. They are quickly going fast. You're going to want to get yours. They are selling out. It's uiasummit2024.eventbrite.com is an easy way to register. Otherwise, if you just go over to the UIA's website at theuia.org, at the very top banner, it will direct you to be able to purchase a ticket. And those have been set at the very bare minimum cost to just be able to cover the experience that we're going to create for you. And that's why today is so important, is I'm going to share with you an example from our last summit, which, again, these only have happened. It's only happened one other time in 10 years. So it's rare. This is not a regular annual convening that you can just hope you get to next time. You'll see that the standard of care that we put into the design, the content, and the execution is really unparalleled. The UIA Summit is really designed around what the field needs. We wanted to create an event only when it was necessary, and it was specifically because there's a need that is outstanding that we can see is going to get in the way. And for us, we think that there needs to be an opportunity for campuses to be able to pull away, actually get some time as a small team to huddle and focus on where you are with your data. Where are you in terms of your journey of improvement? Tactically, what's working? What's not? What ideas do you need to consider? What are the most compelling ideas you need to know? And how do you actually get time to work on your work? Okay, that's one of our core observations of the field, is that we never actually have time to work on our work. It's part of the reason why it feels like it's on top of us. And it's why we can often be executing in a very unstrategic way. So the summit is going to be, first, provide that. It's second, going to make sure that you have the insights about the most compelling, cutting edge innovation, insights and learning in the field, and the cumulative effect of what 10 years of collaborative work across the Alliance has led to. But also, we try and set a very specific stage because we think at this moment in time, we can see that people need to have a focused eye with a sense of resilience. We can tell that the uncertainty of this moment and the chapter ahead is going to require us to huddle and actually get on the same page and to have a game plan for no matter what happens in front of us, because it doesn't matter what topic it is, we seem to be only living in a land of curveballs. And so it's time for us to have a plan for each possible scenario, and so that we are not so easily flappable. Like, unflappable is the goal, right? We're designing and curating an experience that will not just give you that huddle time, those, you know, cutting edge ideas, but also is going to give you a chance to really set a game plan and a strategy for the next steps. And lastly, it's going to actually help you find like-minded peers and partners that you can form collaboratives around those similar goals. So all very strategic. I just want to give you a sampling of just what I mean by when I say that this is a little bit different. I am a frequent keynote speaker, and I think that people rise to the stage. So we take it very seriously to design and curate not just an agenda that is, you know, who's available. We are focused on the specific message that needs to be communicated, the specific storytelling, storytellers. We're looking for a degree of vulnerability and candor that you just simply don't see elsewhere. And we think that people rise to the occasion. So in order to do that, we set an incredibly a beautiful stage that ideally you give your best work on, and that you will always treasure that video because it will be, I think, better than a TED stage in terms of the visual of what you're able to achieve. But we also invest in providing speaking coaches, because often speakers are often, you know, as again, as someone who speaks regularly for part of my work, I am often, you can fall into the same trap of saying the same thing. And what you need is professional expertise and guidance to be able to shape it in a way that really you have your best ideas. And so that's one of the many investments we make, is providing speaking coaches so that people actually are giving their best ideas that they have never given before to our audience. So in 2018, we believed that people needed to have a serious conversation about fear of failure and no intentional process to surface the learning from failure. Specifically, we were looking at fear. And so we found the right person to tell that story and to share that message. We set that incredible stage, and this is a great example of it. We also separately believe in tweaking the incentives and rewards in the field to suit what we actually think is needed. And an example of that is that we unveiled, I think it was in 2015, we unveiled the National Leadership in Student Success, Innovation, and Collaboration Award. At first, the first recipient was Dr. Tim Renick at the National Institute for Student Success. And it was because of the way that he operated in our collaborative was so generous. It was always very selfless. He was always willing to give all of his, you know, data and information, and he would spend a lot of extra time helping coach institutions. And we thought that that's the kind of behavior we need, is more collaborative, generous behavior in the field that really helps others and that is data driven. And so that's one example of a recipient. But then later, right before this speech you're about to see, we awarded this to President Michael Sorrell from Paul Quinn College, who has been a longtime friend of the Alliance, who is Forbes, one of the top 50 leaders in the world. Just incredible background, has driven a real transformative journey there, and is not interested in going it alone. In fact, trying to spur other institutions to learn from their experience, and at the time was about to launch a collective effort using Paul Quinn's work around work colleges. So just want to set the stage of, this is exactly the message that we thought that the higher ed sector needed. This was exactly the right person to provide it. I think that this is some of the best work I've seen from him, and it's only gotten better. It's also just a great example of kind of what you can experience and expect at the UA National Summit. So I am thrilled to share with you his speech that is about overcoming fear.
I am Ray Magliozzi, co-host of NPR's Car Talk. If you're working to solve the biggest challenges in higher education, you've come to the right podcast. And if you're looking for a student retention platform proven to get results, check out mainstay.com. I may be biased because the CEO of Mainstay just happens to be my son. So instead of taking my word for it, you can trust the research they've done with Georgia State, Brown, and Yale as proof that Mainstay improves enrollment, retention, and well-being. Visit mainstay.com/research to learn more.
All right, now, what I'm supposed to do, I'm supposed to talk to you about becoming revolutionaries. I'm supposed to talk to you about becoming change agents. I'm supposed to talk to you about how to create this amazing revolution in higher education. That is what I've been tasked to do. But if I can be honest with you, I don't really feel like doing that. And I don't feel like doing that because to talk about revolutions is to assume that we have mastered and conquered all of the things that hold us back. And the number one thing that holds us back is fear. So before we can talk about becoming revolutionaries, we have to conquer our fear. So if it's okay with you, what I'd like to talk to you about is fear. Is that okay? Some of you might look at me and think, what do you really know about fear? Right? I mean, you're a big guy. You're an athlete. You've done lots of stuff. What do you really, really know about fear? And to be honest with you, I didn't really know a hell of a whole lot about fear. Right? I didn't live my life from a place of fear. I typically assumed whatever it was that I wanted to do, I would succeed. Whatever issues were in my way, I would just run them over or I would outthink them. I was not very familiar with fear until I took the job as president of Paul Quinn College. And my path to the presidency is one that is very, very difficult to replicate because I just got a phone call one day driving down a highway. And I was part of a group that was negotiating to buy an NBA franchise. And the chair of the board at Paul Quinn called me up and said, hey, how would you like to be president? That's a very unusual search firm, by the way. And I said, you know, we're buying a basketball team. I'm moving to Memphis. I'm going to get to be president of the franchise. So thank you, but I don't know what you're going to pay me, but they're going to pay me more. Right? And I said, you know, why are you even calling me? I mean, I didn't apply for the job. And that's something else that I would encourage you to keep in mind. When people call you to offer you a job that you didn't apply for, there's a catch. All right? Now, you might be one of those handful of people that think they're offering you a job just because you're amazing and people drive around thinking, God, we should hire you. If you're that person, you are crazy. All right? Chances are, if people offer you a job you didn't apply for, it's because nobody wanted it. That's how I became president of Paul Quinn. And what I didn't know at the time was just how much trouble the institution was in. We had 30 days of cash on hand. By the way, always ask to see the books before you take a job. I did not, okay. But we had 30 days of cash left. Everything was broken, and we were a failing institution. We were easily one of the worst institutions in the country. Our creditor tried to kick us out. It was rough. And I get there, and I find out we have a year to a year and a half before we will go out of business if we don't make radical changes. So every day I go home thinking, Paul Quinn College is 135 years old. It survived Reconstruction. It survived the Depression. It survived Jim Crow, but it might not survive Mike Sorrell. And it was going to be a very public failing. And it was scary. And every day I lived with that reality, that cloud hanging over my head. It forced me to work 18-hour days, 7 days a week, for a year and a half, until one morning I woke up in a hospital. Everyone who I knew and loved was looking down at me. And they take the breathing machine off of me, and they bring me out of the medical-induced coma. And they say to me, you survived a sudden cardiac, well, actually they didn't tell me this at the time. They just said I had a cardiac episode. And I'm like, I had a heart attack? And they said, no, it was a cardiac episode. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Right? Turns out I suffered something called sudden cardiac death. And I had a 2% chance of living, all right? So I should not have lived. I literally was so afraid of failure that I killed myself. Fear took me to a place where I was in a hospital having to be resuscitated. At that moment, when I came to, and I could begin to wrap my mind around what happened, I realized something. We were going to win at Paul Quinn College. And I realized we were going to win because the Lord doesn't save you to humiliate you. That's not how faith works. Now, I know maybe two Bible passages, but I'm a man of deep faith. And at the moment when you survive a near-death experience, it changes you. It fundamentally changes you. Because what I realized was fear has no place in our lives. Fear cannot be the thing that drives us, that keeps us, that holds us back, that prevents us from doing what our heart, what our minds, what our passion, what the people we love the most would have us do. And at that moment, I let go of being afraid of failure, and I decided that we were going to win. I didn't always know how we were going to win, but I knew that we were going to win. And so for the remaining time that we have together tonight, the gift that I can give you is to teach you how to defeat your fear without having to wake up on a hospital bed and be scared or shocked into conquering your fear. So what we're going to do today, we're going to talk about the three steps to conquering your fear. Step number one, if you really want to let go of your fear, if you really want to stop being a portion of who you can be, you have to lead with love. You have to find something in your life. You have to find something in your life that really emotionally matters to you. Something that wakes you up in the morning, something that sends you to bed at night, something that you can pour your heart and your soul into. You have to find that. I did not always have that. I led from a place of rage. I led from a place of anger, a place where I didn't like people who doubted me. I didn't like people who dismissed me. I didn't like being dismissed because of the color of my skin. I didn't like being dismissed because of my size. I did not like that. I channeled that into rage. Rage drove me. Rage sent me to a hospital bed. So I changed. I changed to someone who learned to lead with love. Now, I didn't get there easily. I was a mess as a young college president. I was all over the place. One day I got into a fight with a male student on my campus. Like, we were yelling at each other, cussing each other out. I mean, let's be honest, you know you cuss, okay? All right? He comes in my office, we're yelling and screaming. He breaks down in tears. I don't know what to do with that because I'm from Chicago, right? You're a brother who cries in Chicago, you will get killed, okay? So I'm just like, psh. Well, luckily, I had a staff member there with me. She cared for him. She took him out of the room, and then she turned her attention on me, and she was an older staff member. She was a quintessential Southern mother, and she looked at me, and she said, baby, I met your mother, and your mother was tough on you. But you have never lived one moment of your life wondering if you were loved. She said, in fact, you bear all the signs of being overloved. I'm like, did you just throw some shade at me, right? Did you just talk about my mama, all right? And she changed me. She said, I know you love our students, but if you want them to know you love them, you're gonna have to lead with love. Saved me. Saved me as a man, saved me as a president, and put me in touch with the side of myself that frankly has made me so much better and happier as a person. So our first step is we're going to learn to lead with love. At Paul Quinn College, we do that with our institutional ethos of we over me. The needs of a community supersede the wants of an individual. At Paul Quinn College, you don't get to be selfish. You have to pour yourself into the work. We turn the institution outward so we can address the needs of the communities we serve from a place of love. You all are serving a population of students that need you to love them. And I'm not talking about creepy love, okay? Let me just be clear, because Some of y'all are like, oh yeah, right? No, I'm talking about authentic love. The love you feel when you are selfless. The love you feel when you are dedicating your soul to the work. That is important. Here's one example of how we did that. We used to have a football team. You might have heard of it. No, you didn't hear of it because they lost every game, right? We terminated the football. The first act I did as a college president was I terminated the football program, right? Football team got a little mad. Let's be honest, right? The community surrounding the college was in a food desert. And no one helped us. They'd been a food desert for over 20 years. So we turned our football field into a farm so that we could feed the people in the community. For the last, since 2010, we have grown more than 50,000 pounds of food. We give away 10% of everything we grow. We call it tithing to the community. We have inspired guilted the city into opening up a grocery store across the street from the campus. So our small college ended a food desert, right? Thank you. That's an example of leading with love. James and Darcia run our farm. This summer, they started a food farmer's market, which is fantastic. Second example of how you conquer your fear, get in the arena. Get in the arena. Teddy Roosevelt gave an amazing speech, Man in the Arena. It's fantastic. I encourage you to read it. But here's what I want you to know about getting in the arena. It means you find the fight that is worth fighting and you get after it. At Paul Quinn College, we have decided to dedicate our entire institution, our existence, to one goal. We're going to end poverty. We're going to use higher education and all the tools at our disposal to address poverty and to end poverty. That is the arena we have decided to get in. We welcome you to join that arena, but find the one that you're most passionate about. But understand this, that poverty in today's environment has to be addressed. For the first time in our country's history, over 50% of the students in K-12 are living free and reduced lunch lives. Over 50% of the students in college today are on Pell Grants. 45 million Americans are living in poverty. The problem is the people who could do something about this have chosen not to. Billionaires made so much money last year, they could end extreme poverty 7 times. And they are sitting on the sidelines. They're using their money to fund, I'm sorry, I realize I'm in the South, so I'm not gonna go political, but they are funding things that aren't in everyone's best interest. We'll just say it that way, okay? This is in everyone's best interest. We have a responsibility to end poverty. Number 3, your next must be greater than your now. The third way to conquer your fear is to realize you are living for something. You have a purpose. That purpose carries you forward. Your next must be better than your now. This is Asia Morrell. She is a freshman at Paul Quinn College. She's from Memphis, Tennessee. I love this picture because the look on her face says it all. Her tomorrow is filled with hope. Here's how we deliver hope at Paul Quinn College. We turned our institution into the first urban work college in the country. And we built an academic model called reality-based education. And reality-based education is this, 3 legs. Number 1, experiential learning. The work program allows students to take what they are learning in the classroom and apply it immediately in their jobs. All of our students who live on campus work between 10 to 15 hours a week. Some work on campus, others work off campus. It allowed us to cut over $10,000 out of tuition and fees and create a pathway for our students to graduate owing less than $10,000 when they graduate from college. That's important because some people will tell you that the way out of poverty is education. I don't claim to be a genius, but I think the way out of poverty is with money, okay? So we're gonna help our students pay less money back for the rest of their lives. Number 2, we believe in project-based learning infused with entrepreneurial thought and action, all right? So in our classes, all of our students are required to do group projects. and the group projects, the subject of them, are problems from their lives. So we are encouraging the students to solve the problems of their own lives. Imagine if you sat in class and someone gave you the ability to actually apply what you're learning for the things you cared the most about. That might make the difference of it all. So that is what we are doing, project-based learning infused with entrepreneurial thought and action. We think it's everything. The third leg, though, is what we've chosen to do with the liberal arts. Everybody bashes the liberal arts. We decided the liberal arts are still good. They just need to be freshened up a little bit, right? I mean, they've been the same thing for hundreds and hundreds of years. Maybe we should make them relevant to today's society. So we asked some employers, what do you care most about? What do people need to do to be successful? They said, one, they need to be able to write. Students, our employees need to be able to speak. They need to be able to think critically, and they need to have technology-based understanding. So we said, sounds like there's room for a new version of the liberal arts. Now, we brand everything at Paul Quinn College. So we see your liberal arts, we just got rid of them. We're now the Quinnite arts, okay? So when you go back to your school and you talk about liberal arts learning, you're really talking about the Quinnite arts. All right, just give us a nod, we understand, all right? So here's what we're doing. Every class now requires you to write. So each class requires students to write. It's called writing across the curriculum. That is based off of the traditional liberal arts version called grammar, all right? Number two, if you have to be able to speak, how about we require every student to speak in each class? So each class now requires students to stand up and give a presentation so that they become comfortable presenting their ideas. That's called speaking across the curriculum. Number three, reasoning across the curriculum, teaching the students to think critically and solve problems by engaging with the subject matter in a critical fashion. That's the old-time liberal arts version of reasoning. All right, so now each class requires you to do that. Lastly, we are in the technology age. So maybe we should teach the students how to master technology. And that's not Snapchat. That's not Twitter. That just because you can text doesn't mean that you have built digital mastery. So now, starting next fall, all of our classes will require the students to demonstrate digital mastery and to build digital mastery. Now, obviously, that wasn't part of the original liberal arts because there was no technology back then, all right? But there is now. Writing across the curriculum, speaking across the curriculum, thinking critically across the curriculum, and building digital mastery across the curriculum. When you marry that with project-based learning, and when you marry that with experiential learning, you now have an era of education that speaks to the needs of the students who are here today. You have the ability to address the things that are causing financial instability in their lives. You can break the cycle of poverty, because we are here to end poverty. Paul Quinn College is expanding, all right? We are going to open up campuses in different cities. We are forming a consortium with some of the universities that are here right now. This is where we are headed because we understand this. We understand how important it is, and we encourage you to embrace it as well. But even as we conquer our fear, even as we understand those three steps that it's gonna take for you to defeat your fear, you have to remember, and you have to keep this at the base of your soul. This has nothing to do with you. You are not conquering your fear for yourselves. You're not conquering your fear because it's gonna get you a better job. You're not conquering your fear because it's gonna turn you into a public intellectual. You are conquering your fear because it's about your students. It's about their lives. Listen, I want you to be bold. I want you to be daring. I want you to be strong. I want you to be a revolutionary, but not for the sake of being daring, not for just the sake of being bold, not just because it's cool to be a revolutionary. I want you to do it because you understand that more than anything else, we have an obligation to those who have entrusted us with their futures. They are coming from families where this is the only dream that they have, the dream of a better tomorrow, the dream that their next will be better than their now. That is what we are here for. At least that is what we should be here for. And if you are really here for that, if you have come for that true purpose, if this is your truest and best version of yourself, if this is where you stand on the shoulders of giants so you can be tall, if this is what you believe in, then your fear will dissipate. I have not been afraid since I woke up that morning. And my job hasn't gotten easier. And there have been difficult times. There continue to be difficult times. But my soul no longer belongs to me. It belongs to my students. It belongs to a community that I have chosen to serve. And every day when I step out and I serve them with the most authentic place that I can come from, with the most bountiful amount of love that I can possess, I don't feel fear. I feel joy. I feel gratitude for being able to do the work that they have allowed me to do. And so for the time together that we have had, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for being open to the idea that you can face your fears. Thank you for being open to the idea that you can dream a bigger dream. Thank you for being open to the possibility of revolutionary action and revolutionary dreams, because you understand that fear has no place in your life. Let go of your fear and watch what happens next. Thank you.
That was a fantastic short keynote from President of Paul Quinn College, Michael Sorrell. And one of the many things that is slightly different about our events is that we believe a keynote should be 20 to 22 minutes. And that's what that was. So I hope that this gives you just a little bit of a taste of what is in store. And again, that was from 2018, that the question really is, who are the messengers and what are the messages that are going to be most valuable to support you and your work in this very unique chapter in American higher education? We hope that you'll answer the call to come and join us in Tempe, Arizona in October. The summit invite has gone out and the tickets are now going fast. So that's UIA Summit 2024, eventbrite.com, and otherwise on the UIA's website. So I hope this has been informative in terms of thinking differently about the ways that we can convene people together, the kinds of conversations to surface and elevate. Sometimes it really is like about the format by which we are sharing information can definitely impact whether or not we can take the message, and setting folks up to give their best work. So I hope this has been helpful. I look forward to sharing with you a bit more about how the summit is being developed, because we are doing it in real time with you in the center, because we want to make sure that everything we do is actually responsive to what the needs of the broader higher ed community are, what they emerging are, where they're going, and that we are trying to help, you know, not just shine a light on the UIA as the people providing the answer, but rather surfacing the voices and the insights that are coming from around the field. So I look forward to sharing with you some more. Thanks again for watching this episode of Innovating Together.